This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
No idea how bad it gets.
Sally, I think I'll buy the flowers myself.
But you're not a girl, you're a guy. And why would a guy want to marry a guy?
Don't stomp your little lassies and flatter she's a me, honey.
John Callio, will you go round with me?
Don't fuck with me, fellas!
Oh, I feel so damn sick and dirty, I can't stand it anymore.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Is butter a club?
I had a hunch you might be a real romantic.
We were decoys. He used us as bait. We procured for him.
We could have had a good life together. Fucking real good life. But you didn't want it, Ennis. So what we got now is broke right now.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening, in celebration of the Cake Maker hitting select cinemas again for a limited theatrical run, we are spotlighting some of our favourite queer films to feature food.
Food.
Which is something
delicious.
I think that we're all across.
Now, isn't food like the universal language? Everyone understands food. Is that? Did I get that right or have I mixed it up?
I'm Greek, so I just assume it? Everyone does.
Well, I'm Jewish, so I assume everyone does too. It's the language of our culture.
It's the language of love.
Oh, or is it love is the universal language?
Well, food is definitely the love language in my... Yeah, uh-huh. And, you know, when we want to celebrate or, you know, yeah. When we want to tell someone we love them because they're having a hard time or because we do love them, we cook for them in my culture.
That's... I think a lot of people would do that. Mm. But, you know, for some reason then my mind was sort of going off onto a tangent. So when we're talking about
kind of something...
how food is the language of love, but, you know, that might be for a different show where we're talking about feeders and growers, you know, that kind of that food fetish thing. So maybe that's for another show on Joy.
Gina, whenever the higher we aim, the lower he goes.
I love you, Alan. I want to cook for you.
That's true. That's
true. So here's me taking us back up there. Okay. I think there is something about the way that food is used in cinema as this kind of plot device to bridge cultural and his sexual divides. Mm. And I think oftentimes the divides we see in queer films are that much greater and that much more profound. So when the dinner table or a particular dish or food in general is kind of used to bridge those divides, it takes on even more resonance in the story. Mm. And I think that's clearly what's happening in Cake Maker, which is a film that we're going to be looking at later this evening.
Are you two not going to have a fight over this film like we did last time?
I don't remember that.
In a corner.
I don't remember.
I've got the clip.
What was it? What were we?
We both had a different opinion of the protagonist's role in the film. One, and I won't name and shame. One thought he was pathological. The other presenter. No, I actually understood the character's journey in that story, but I'll let you go back and listen to that podcast of The Cake Maker when we covered it for the Jewish International Film Festival.
But there are so many other queer films that spotlight this kind of content, so films like Eat With Me and What's Cooking, which is this wonderful film that brings together all kinds of culturally diverse families and sexually diverse families over one meal.
Thanksgiving. You forgot fried green tomatoes.
I did.
I know. I can't
and
believe
And you reminded
that.
Of it. And any of it before the program.
I'll forgive you because in the film, I mean, the lesbian relationship is completely ambiguous, unlike the novel. Mm. But it still did win a Gay and Lesbian Alliance Award for Best Feature Film with Lesbian Content. I mean, that shows you how thin our lesbian content was when that won the year.
Ouch.
There are so many queer films to spotlight food, some to lesser extents and some to greater extents. And I think we easily forget how kind of pivotal the food scenes are. Mm. So we're going to play a little quiz to kick off our program tonight. We're pitting not Alan and me this time. We're pitting Gina, you against Alan to see.
Get your buzz already, Alan.
Who can...
who's the feeder?
Who's the feeder?
Can't wait for that show, Alan.
All right, so we're gonna name a dish, mm-hmm. and we're gonna see who's the first to recollect which queer film, a film that we've focused on before on this program. Mm. That dish is from. Mm-hmm. Now, usually you're both pretty poor when we play these kind of games.
The judgment is flying.
So let's see how you fare this evening. So dish number one, pie and pudding en flambé.
Oh, my God.
Pie and pudding en flambé.
It's the flambé, Julia and Julia.
No.
Flambé alone? No.
I knew you both have no idea.
Is it Beauty and the Beast?
Oh, my God, it is.
It's Beauty and the Beast. Whoa, one for me.
10 points, Alan.
Pie and pudding en flambé. We'll prepare and serve with flair a culinary.
There you go. You got a point. Well done. Okay, so dish number two. Okay, I don't think you're going to, either of you are going to get this one.
But just ask the question.
Hard-boiled eggs.
Hard-boiled eggs.
For breakfast?
No, pass.
And this is not MasterChef, so.
Okay, I'm going to give you a hint.
Yeah.
So peaches and cream is not a dish served in this film, but it may as well be.
Peaches and cream.
Is it a Prince film? No.
Peaches and cream. Oh, my goodness. That's a very English thing. Yeah, like, it's a complexion.
This film is made by a director who is fascinated with food.
Oh, okay. Oh, hang on. Are we talking about Call Me By Your
we
Name?
We are talking about
Peaches and Cream.
Yes.
But it features a peach. It's got the best peach scene ever. I'm surprised that was why your hint was peach.
Well, because that's it's not the dish in the... So
it's a bit cryptic. All about... Peaches with cream?
Yeah, I know. Well, yeah, exactly. You know. Well, I like the cryptic clue now.
I would say peaches.
And apricot nectar. There were so many
with
things.
With a hot cream injection. Okay. That's probably how I would describe it.
If we put you both to shame with that one, let Gina regain her composure.
Sorry. Yeah.
Arroz con pollo.
Rice with chicken. That sounds like it's a Spanish film.
No, I would go Jewish film.
You're both wrong. I'm going to give you a hint.
One Chef Special.
Moonlight.
Right up.
Oh, my God. The best scene in the film.
Right.
Moonlight.
So this is the
that
dish.
What he was cooking?
That's what he cooks. Mm-hmm. And the recipe is all over the internet now as well. So if you too want to make the dish that bonds Chiron with his long-lost lover, you can. I mean, I think that's one of the great things about these dishes. You can kind of recreate them at home.
That's the kind of dish you might want to take to a school reunion, just in case. Long-lost lover.
Nice tip.
Anyway.
Next dish, the crab thing. I there's no way either of you are going
to
get this.
Bad joke there.
The Go crab ahead. Thing. Okay, so
we're talking about the ones you eat or the ones you.
I didn't want to go there, Alan. I'm glad you took it there.
Food is used in this film as a symbol to tie three different generations of women together.
Crab.
The crab thing?
It must have Nicole Kidman in it, I'm thinking, and Sandra Bullock, possibly.
It's the witch's magic. It's a patchical magic, isn't it?
Oh, my God.
It's the hours.
Meryl Streep. She's making the crab thing.
We got Nicole Kidman right, though. Because it's
Nicole
Daniel.
Kidman, yeah.
Okay, final film. Okay. The dish is a croissant.
A croissant?
A croissant. Julia and Julia.
No. Every dish is like Julia and Julia. You've got a pretty good chance, but no.
No.
I'm going to give you a hint. Yeah, okay. This is the music that sets the scene.
Okay.
Can't be Breakfast at Tiffany's. Is it? Well, I thought we were doing Queer.
Well, hang on. It's a Truman Capote.
Oh, well, true. Okay. Give it to Truman.
Audrey Hepburn.
We weren't talking about Mickey.
You know, fast and loose. But yeah. I think, you know, we can...
Okay.
We can take this as one of our own.
I'll give you that. Look, if they were both playing escorts, then I should imagine there was a bit of queerness going on in that world.
Yeah. And it is Truman. Mm-hmm.
But there are so many films like Moonlight, like Breakfast at Tiffany's, like Julia and Julia, like The Hours, like Beauty and the Beast, which feature food as a kind of plot device to propel the narrative forward. And they're not just queer. I mean, there's a wonderful array of films to feature food.
Mm, that's right. And it's not just queer films. And that's what we want you, our listener, to text in and let us know what your favourite film that has a film, a food kind of subtext or a main plot line to it, and let us know. And if bonus points for a queer film with food in it. So please text in and let us know on 0427JOY949 or email us on air@joy.org.au.
And you can't be cheeky like me and just suggest Nigella Lawson on loop talking about making an eaten mess, because that clip, oh, my God. Anyway, sorry, I'll just...
Right. Okay.
Well, that's not a film as
no,
such.
No, but, you know, if you spend an hour
whereas
watching
this,
it...
this clip, I think, is one of the most famous food scenes from a film, certainly when I was growing up.
Smells chocolatey, eh? Now, eat it.
I don't want any. Thank you.
Eat it!
You both, you're looking stunned, Matilda.
See, I would have gone Charlie in the Chocolate Factory, or is it The Witches where they eat the cherries?
That's Hocus Pocus? Is that Hocus Pocus?
The one with Jack Nicholson where they, and Meryl Streep, and they're eating all the cherries, and then
Witches of Eastwick.
Oh, that's the one.
Okay. But perhaps I think the kind of most iconic food scene in any film.
Now, tell me, what's your pleasure? A la carte? Dinner? Aha! Okay. Hey, Joe, Butcher, he says he wants two spaghetti speciale, heavy on the meatball.
Tony, dogs don't talk.
He's a talking to me.
Okay, he's a talking to you. You the boss.
Mamma mia, mangiare, you can never sit here.
Now, here you are, the best spaghetti in the town.
Such a sweet film. Aww. From Disney's Lady and the Tramp.
Lady and the Tramp. Listen, Daniel, I'm going to have to say it. I want the listener to save us from your obscure food references, please. Can you please text in and let us know what your favourite film is, please?
0427.
And save us from these random obscure references
oh
that nobody's going to get.
0427JOY949 or email us on air@joy.org.au.
Well, we are spotlighting apparently obscure films that highlight food this evening. We'll be speaking with the cake maker director Ophir Raul Greitzer next. His film The Cake Maker hit select cinemas this week for a limited theatrical run. Before we speak with Ophir, though, we're revisiting one of our favourite segments here on Outtakes. It's time for this week's edition of the Outtakes Weekly Outtakes.
Starting at the biggest film festival in the world, Cannes. So lesbian romance film Rafiki has received a standing ovation at Cannes. The film has been banned in its home country of Kenya for depicting young lesbian love between two teenage girls in Nairobi. Rafiki reminds us that mainstream LGBTQI narratives are not to be taken for granted, especially positive feel-good stories.
Also at Cannes, Kate Blanchett and Agnes Varda have led 82 female filmmakers in silent red carpet protest. The protest aimed to address the ongoing gender gap in the film industry. Said Blanchett, "We stand on the steps today as a symbol of our determination and commitment to progress. 82 women, representing the number of female directors who have climbed these stairs since 1946. Now, in that same period, 1,688 male directors have been awarded nods at the festival.
Amazing. They came to play and they came to slay. RuPaul and several Drag Race alums have made their cartoon debut in Drag Tots, a new animated series set in a grammar school for tiny drag queens.
I can't wait to see this.
Sounds so hilarious. Cute. Can't wait.
And Bradley Cooper and Jake Gyllenhaal are set to battle it out in opposing Leonard Bernstein productions. Both leading men have been attached to films about the West Side Story composer in recent days. Cooper is set to star and direct in a film produced by Steven Spielberg, while Gyllenhaal has been tapped to lead the Cary Fukunaga biopic.
And Jules, Catch One has hit popular online streaming services that you can view here in Australia. The documentary follows Jewel Thace Williams, lesbian woman of colour who established a long-running disco in America. She helped change laws, save lives and influence communities across the US. Catch our podcast and our chat with C. Fitz, the director of Jewel's Catch One, at joy.org.au/outtakes.
Sounds great. Can't wait to see that.
Great one.
And finally, in local news, Neighbours is set to air the first gay wedding on primetime Australian TV. David Tanaka and Aaron Brennan are finally set to get married when on a romantic trip to a beach takes a surprising turn. And we're hoping that Charlene performs at the wedding.
No.
Imagine if Kylie rocks up.
Wouldn't
that be good?
Mm. Well, that's it for another edition of the Outtakes, Weekly Outtakes. We're spotlighting the cake maker next, speaking with the director of the film, Ophir Raoul Greitzer. Right after this, you're listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9.
There's only one Joy.
Joy.org.au.
What is it that you really like to do?
Eat.
I know. And we are so good at it. Look at you now.
I'm growing in front of you.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9. And again, they're a clip from the hit food flick, Julie and Julia. Meryl Streep and food in one film. I like that. You can't really go anywhere from that.
It was such a great film.
It was great.
I loved it. And Meryl Streep was just amazing. So was Stanley Tucci.
I know.
All the performances in that film were amazing.
Delicious.
We are asking for your messages as well. Do message in and let us know what your favourite film to spotlight food is. The number is 0427JOY949, or you can email us at onair@joy.org.au. We have heard from
Simon, our newsreader. Simon, so thank you for the news earlier, Simon, who reminded us about Oliver, and it's got a song, Food, Glorious Food. So thank you, Simon.
Yeah, I know. I felt sorry for poor Oliver in that film, because all he had was gruel. It was porridge.
And he wanted
more.
I'm not
sure if he could describe porridge and gruel as food, glorious food.
I love a bit of porridge in the morning.
Do
you? Yeah.
Oh,
I used to have it every morning when I was in the UK.
Yeah. Whereas a film that annoys me because of its food references that have now made it into popular culture is My Big Fat Greek Wedding. We can no longer just call a cake a cake. Yes. It is gekimori.
What does that mean?
It's a Greek way of saying cake, but yes. In a bit of an, you know, but everyone I know now just doesn't say, oh, I brought cake, I brought gekimori.
Well,
and anytime you say vegetarian, of course you're offered lamb. Like, it's just... You know, have lamb.
But, you know, but my favourite scene...
I love how people...
But my favourite scene from that is like, what? You don't eat meat?
Exactly. It's true. And true.
I love that people really think that they can continue making those jokes and they'll still be funny, the film references.
Please end them now.
But speaking of cake, we are spotlighting The Cake Maker
this evening.
Cake
Maker, yes.
It's a 2017, so a little bit slow to be released theatrically here, Israeli-German drama film directed by Ophir Raoul Greitzer. Now, it did do the festival circuit here in Melbourne and indeed across the country last year, but it is having a broader theatrical release. And it deals with, it's a little bit of a convoluted plot, isn't it?
It is.
It deals with a German baker who falls in love with an Israeli tourist who comes to his bakery every time he goes on a business trip. Mm. And then very early on in the film, he dies.
Hang on. They're actually in a relationship. This is a long-term relationship.
No, they're not in a relationship.
I imagine that there was a longer-term relationship.
Definitely.
Hence the lead character's obsession to then go back to his birthplace.
It's a fling every time he's travel. Watch the film. Let us know what you think.
Are you team Alan and Gina or team Daniel?
I don't know. Okay, so there's this relationship of questionable strength happening, and then the Israeli fellow dies very suddenly.
That's right.
And the German cake maker travels to Israel now to visit. It turns out
to stalk. Yes,
it turns out that the Israeli chap is married and has a child with his wife. Mm-hmm. And the German comes and stalks this woman and starts to develop a relationship with her.
That's right. But in Jerusalem.
It's not only that he stalks. It's kind of that single white female. And I think you were saying this last time. He almost tries to fill the roles of his lover's place in their world.
That's right.
So he tries to become
as husband father and provider.
Wearing swimming jocks and all the sort of stuff that, mm-hmm. like he really does try and take on his
life. I think it's important to mention as well that he's moving into Jerusalem, into a world of a more orthodox, conservative Jewish...
hugely orthodox. He's not allowed to turn on the oven. He's not allowed to... Yeah, he's not even allowed to be in an apartment building without people's permission. Mm. That's what I loved exploring in this film.
It's not unremarkable as well that he is German.
Yes.
Mm. But, you know, Jeannie, you're going to... If you loved exploring that, just wait till Disobedience hits cinemas next month.
I cannot wait.
Rachel Weisz and Rachel McAdams. But, clearly, Alan, Gina, you have a take on this story that is what Alan would call psychopathic.
Pathological was the exact word.
Oh, is that pathological? Yeah. Okay.
But so great, fascinating.
We did ask Raoul, the director of this film, to describe the plot to us, and he has somewhat different terms.
It's a film about two people from two countries, from two cultures, two different backgrounds, who end up meeting in a little cafe in Jerusalem and slowly find out that they both share, let's say, the same grief or the same sorrow for the same person. It's a story about a man from Berlin, a baker, a conditor, who has a really nice cafe, and one of his, let's say, permanent customers in the cafe is an Israeli guy who comes to Berlin once a month because of his job. And this Israeli guy, his name is Oren, he has a wife, he has a son, he's coming from Jerusalem, but whenever he comes to Berlin to this cafe, eating the cakes of this German conditor, he's having an affair with him.
The way that you tell this story is very non-judgmental, and I think that's really important because it enables us to develop relationships with the characters. But why did you choose to approach the story in such a non-judgmental way?
I come from a very judgmental place. I mean, I was born and raised in Israel in a little city called Ra'anana, which is a very white, clean, very machoistic, patriotic city. I mean, we had I learned in a high school which was famous for having the biggest amount of pilots in the army. And all these values of nationality and patriotism and machoism, and all this, I mean, I grew up on these values.
Yeah.
And I always resisted them. I always resisted them. I always felt that I'm not a part of these definitions because I think they are just, how can I say it nicely, bullshit. I mean, it's not lies and schemes. I mean, there is no nationality and there is no patriotism and there is no value to flags and to guns. The real values are for emotions, for feeling, for human life, the value of life. And I always resist. I always had to resist to this place, and while doing so, let's say all of my life since I was a child, there was always this question of being judgmental. I mean, are people being judgmental towards my lifestyle, or am I also being judgmental towards their lifestyle? And finding a bridge between all of these ideas is something that I'm aspiring to do. So I cannot judge any of these people, but because I think that all of them have their own pain and all of them have their own, let's say, secret and their own suffering.
I really appreciate that you say that, because this is a film about grief and desire and these very kind of humane emotions and the way that they can really bridge such strong differences, or what we are traditionally led to believe are strong differences. And you have that in the form of nationality here in the bridge between Germany and Israel, and also between kind of secularism and Judaism. And I think they're really interesting ideas that you kind of pit against each other.
I think that's come from my own life. I mean, it's the thing that I know well. I mean, I've been living between Berlin and Jerusalem the last almost 8 years. I'm on the line between Berlin and Jerusalem. And my father is religious, my mother is secular. I came from a home where I was always conflicted between these two values, and it's still a part of me today. For me, it's about breaking this definition. Sexuality also. It's not saying, for example, Thomas, there's a lot of people ask me always, is he gay? Is he not gay? And my answer is always like this. I mean, I don't care. I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, yes, I would say that logically, why he is a homosexual, and what happens between him and that is not a classical love affair. It's not that he's becoming straight.
Yeah.
It's not about that at all. No, it's not about that. It's about them getting connected to each other because of what they share, which is this mutual grief.
In a way, it really kind of undoes the authority that we take these kind of identity categories with. I mean, it really shows us that they're quite useless at the end of the day.
Yes, they are useless. They are useless. And I was criticized by some of the, let's say, by the gay film critics. How do I dare to make a queer movie where there is more heterosexual sex than homosexual sex?
Okay, and how do you respond to that kind of criticism then?
Well, I mean, I would accept any criticism, because the moment the film is out there on the screen, it's no longer mine, so everybody can tell what they think, and it's not a problem. But this thing specifically, I have a strong a political problem.
Yeah.
Because first of all, I'm not saying this is a gay or queer movie.
Yeah.
And I completely resist the definition of gay cinema or queer cinema. I think that it is crucial. It was crucial for many, many years to have this kind of definition, and it is still crucial in some places in the world. In some places in the world, we still have to fight for our rights, and we still are being punished for just being who we are. But let's say in the most of the world, it's not about definition, it's about separation. I mean, the moment you defy something as gay or as lesbian, so maybe there is a danger that you separate it from the rest.
That was Ophir Raoul Greitzer, the director of The Cake Maker, which is opening in cinemas around the country in limited theatrical release later this week. Ophir saying some really controversial things there about
the sexual relationship that takes place in the film.
Well, that and also sexuality full stop. Mm. I mean, it's a problem you run into when you're looking at queer cinema. You know, how can you have queerness is inherently anti-identitarian. It's inherently it refuses labels and categories. But how can you have a category of queer cinema about something that refuses? I mean, it's this kind
of... It's a paradox.
Well,
it is.
And us as viewers see it that way. But him as the filmmaker, intention in telling that story.
I think what he's noting is that as viewers, and we saw this when Call Me By Your Name came out,
yes.
People want their characters to be one thing or another.
Yeah.
They want to pin them down. They want to assign them a sexuality.
Don't want to do that.
No, the distributors do. The distributors.
Well, that trailer for Call Me By Your Name is very. Very
heterosexual,
tame.
Isn't it? It's very. You can't even tell that there's.
But
a
we
gay.
Hear, no. You know, we'll be speaking with Ophir later again in the program, and he tells us the story, and we heard the same story from Luca Guadagnino before Call Me By Your Name came out. We hear of the studios refusing to fund films if there's not, you know, a big coming out scene, and if there isn't some kind of antagonist who kind of whacks the person coming out back down to the ground because that's what the studios want to be able to
and remember
to sell these films.
Lucas, in making the film, they wanted the mother to be the antagonist.
Correct.
And I'm so glad he didn't go down that trope of a female you know, antagonist. Why can't the mother be meaner? So, like, love that he fought.
Which is why a film like The Cake Maker, but also Call Me By Your Name, furnishes such an interesting contradistinction to a film like Love, Simon, which was just released, because this is, Love, Simon is the film that the studios want to release. We have a by-the-books coming-out narrative with clear antagonists, clear supports as well, but there's this clear kind of central tension that runs along the lines that we used to see 10, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. But now we have left of center, these kind of anti-identitarian kind of political, subtly political films like The Cake Maker and even Call Me By Your Name, which we can compare them with, that do give us a slightly more nuanced perspective in relation to sexuality.
And that this is it. This is this sexual fluidity that we see in these films that Hollywood finds challenging.
Correct.
Is that right?
Yep. But no, we're looking at The Cake Maker this evening, apart from all these interesting questions that it gives rise to, because, of course, it deals with cake and we like cake.
And the cooking scenes in The Cake Maker are actually really interesting.
It's gorgeous.
It's great. I mean, it's fascinating because we actually get to understand a little bit of what it means to be kosher in Jerusalem, in a kosher cafe. I mean, so, you know, that crosses that cultural and religious divide. And so we're actually learning from that. I found that fascinating.
Same.
And in a way is really interesting to compare with a film like Eat With Me, which is another, this time a gay film, queer, yes, but certainly gay, that deals with this kind of the preparation of food and the bonding over the preparation of food and how bonding in preparing food has the power to transcend kind of cultural divides and sexual barriers.
Oh, sexual barriers in food. Wow. Wow, that's a big call, Daniel. I think I totally agree with the rest of your statement, but as soon as you said that, I'm like thinking, oh, man, you know, I'd say most of us prepare food with our family. So I think that is probably...
Is that the nine and a half reference?
You know what I mean. When there are profound differences in families in relation to one member of the family's sexuality, the dinner table can furnish the kind of
a battleground
over which they come together.
Oh, right. Okay.
And that happens in Eat With Me.
Sharing of a meal.
And in What's Cooking.
And in What's Cooking, absolutely.
That we're going to look at later this evening. Mm-hmm. We have asked our listeners to message in on 0427JOY949 or email us at onair@joy.org.au and let us know what your favourite film scene food. Is with food, film food alliterations.
Hey, and you know what? We've heard from Greg from Croydon, and Greg tells us that his favourite scene is the Blazing Saddles baked bean scene. Now, everybody knows that beans means farts, so I'll just leave it up to your imagination as to what that scene is all about.
If you have a favourite scene, message in on 0427JOY949 and let us know. In the meantime, more coming up with the director of The Cake Maker, Ophir Grazia, right after this. You're listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening, in celebration of the limited theatrical release of The Cake Maker, we are turning our attention to some really excellent queer films that spotlight food and show us how food can be this kind of plot device to bridge cultural and, yes, even sexual divides.
I'm not sold.
But the program's not through. We'll see. We'll check back in with Alan and see how he feels at the end of the night. Right, so we're speaking with
Ophir.
Ophir. You're looking like you have something to say, Alan.
No, I don't. No, I'm saving it for later. I'm saving it for Ron.
I'm letting it stew. Yeah. He's letting it simmer and stew and cook up.
It's second course, maybe leftovers.
Right. Bit of dessert.
Leftovers.
Yeah, and get your just dessert.
Okay. Yeah, we've missed
and
your
the bad puns,
Alan.
Yeah.
All right. Look, we're speaking with Ophir. He has had some controversial things to say about sexual identity and indeed identity more broadly. So we're chatting with Ophir about kind of sexual labels and how he has applied them in his work.
It is important to still have this fight or this definition in the air, but I would say that what we are aspire, what she should aspire to, is to live in a world where these definitions don't matter anymore.
You are by no means the first filmmaker, interestingly, that I've spoken to who has said that the labeling a film as a queer film, for instance, is dangerous because it limits the potential of the film. And the same can be said of the themes in the film, that you don't want to box in a film to a particular category and restrict its potential.
Exactly. And when I tried to make the film, it took a very long time to make the film. It took almost 8 years.
Wow.
And it is actually a very, very extremely low-budget guerrilla filmmaking. It was made in a budget which is, when I say to, let's say, to industry people, people from the film industry, they don't believe me, they think I'm lying. We just were not supported. We did not get the support of the film funds. We did not get any real support for the film.
Yeah.
And one of the things that people said, one of the reactions were when we asked for to know why we're not supported, is that either it's like, no, we already have a gay movie funded this year, or that people reacted to the script saying, no, it's not possible that Thomas will do something with a nut. How can it be that a gay guy is sleeping with a woman? It's not possible. Your script is stupid.
Yeah.
This is the reaction we got from film fund. And this shows completely what you just said. I mean, the fact that there is some kind of categories imposed, and these categories are actually being used in order to limit all kind of ideas.
It's interesting because we were speaking with I don't know if you've seen the new film from Luca Guadagnino, which is getting a lot of...
No, I heard about it, but I haven't seen it.
Well, we were speaking with Luca when the film showed here in Melbourne, and he said a very similar thing, that a lot of producers wouldn't fund the film because there were no anti-gay antagonists in it, and that they didn't think you could have a film with fluid sexuality. You know, he didn't want to define his characters as gay, and the producers wouldn't fund the film unless they brought in other characters who would, you know, have an issue with the sexuality and make it about the characters being gay. And it's the same issue all around the world, that you know, people still have a very clear idea about, or producers at least, about how they want relationships to be depicted in films.
Yeah, exactly. And this is exactly the fight I've been having.
Yeah.
And my film is exactly talking against it, because it's about people who don't want to be defined in a certain way.
Yeah.
Want to just be, you know, and they can love each other regardless of their sexuality or their sexual identity. They don't have a sexual identity. They have a human identity.
Yeah.
They have human feelings, like grief and sorrow and love and food and baking. These are things that, you know, cross every border and every culture and every religion and every sexuality. Everybody loves to eat, you know, everybody loves the cake.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Indeed, everyone does love cake.
We do love cake and lemon tart.
And desserts cooked with fresh summer fruits.
Yeah, definitely. And I was about to say that most people love buns. Like to eat buns, don't they?
I love buns.
Yeah, buns and peaches.
I don't understand the hot cross bun controversy. Have them all year round. They taste great. Just take the cross off.
I don't understand the fruit pudding, like the
Christmassy thing. It's fabulous to make, though.
I think it's delicious.
Like,
yeah.
What, Christmas pudding?
Yeah, everyone bags on it.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, the more rum in it, the better.
Totally. Contrary.
Well, that's what I was going to say at the beginning of the program, when Gina was saying she's Greek, so they love food, and I was saying I'm Jewish, so we love food. I was like, it's for you, it's alcohol. Isn't it?
I love booze. Yeah. No surprise there. In every trifle, there's a bottle of sherry.
Fabulous. Love it. Absolutely love it.
All right. So
we're all hungry.
Where were we? We're looking at food in film. And that was, of course, Ophir Gratia, the director of The Cake Maker, which I think, as well as any other film, kind of deals with how food can really bring people together, as Ophir was there saying, through grief. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in a film like What's Cooking, which came out, I think it was 2000.
2000? Yeah.
So this film deals with four different families: a Vietnamese family, a Latino family, a Jewish family, and an African American family, as they come together over a traditional holiday meal. I think it's Thanksgiving, from memory.
Yeah.
You know, each family is beset by its own particular problems. So the Vietnamese family, one of the children in the family has been ejected from his school. Another has been found with a condom, the daughter. And this is like scandalous.
She's been safe, but anyway.
And another is found with a gun. Mm. The Latino family, there's this kind of bitter divorce. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The African-American family, a lot of tension, political tension in the family. Alfre Woodard plays the matriarch in that family, and I love Alfre Woodard, who has, incidentally, been cast in the upcoming Lion King film as the mother. I think that's the name. And then, of course, we have the Jewish family.
Mushbuka, yay! And this is where we come to the lesbian subplot.
Yeah, right. Yay. So there's this wonderful sequence with Kyra Sedgwick and Juliana Margulies. They play Kyra Sedgwick plays the daughter of Lainey Kazan, the matriarch of this Jewish family, and she goes home for Thanksgiving, and she takes her partner, played by Juliana Margulies, it's funny, it's heartwarming.
Look, there's a turkey for Thanksgiving, so you know there's going to be turkey baster and fisting jokes throughout the entire because they're stuffing a turkey. And it just plays so well to a lesbian subplot.
Absolutely.
It's gorgeous.
But what I love about this film is, one, the diversity that it depicts. This really is a film about diverse families.
Mm-hmm. Although, don't you think it's a little bit cliche? I mean, it's a bit contrived. I mean, so here we
are. It is 2000. We need to remember.
Tokenistic. I mean, here we are. Okay, let's think. You know, filmmakers are there like, going, oh, listen, we must have a black family, must have an Asian family,
18
must
years
have a Jewish
ago,
family.
Do we see this in Australian? We've got a diversity report from Screen O'Shea that tells us we're not seeing that now.
Yeah, true.
It's contrived. I'll give you that it's contrived.
It is.
And it does feel contrived, but I don't think that takes away from some of the film's
comedic.
Yeah, it is an engaging film. So there's this scene towards the end of the film where Alfre Woodard, who again I love, one of I think Hollywood's most underrated actresses, she's laying the table with food, all these dishes that have been painstakingly prepared throughout the course of the film, mm-hmm. and just as she puts the turkey on the table, the entire table breaks after like there's been a brouhaha after brouhaha, and this is the final straw, and she just goes in the kitchen and starts like scoffing down the desserts. It's an emotional film with punch. It's funny, and the scene between at the Jewish Thanksgiving table with Kyra Sedgwick playing this closeted lesbian who kind of comes out.
Well, she's not closeted to the parents.
No, but
so
to everyone
knows.
Else at the table.
Yeah.
And she kind of says at the table that she has this secret to share, and everyone thinks she's going to out herself. But instead, take a listen, she has something else to say.
All you working women, you earn big salaries, but before you know it, your face falls, your body drops, and it's too late.
Come on,
what
B.
good is a big house and vacations if you don't have someone to share?
Maybe want some more ice cream?
See, nowadays, they all have good friends who are just like family.
Yeah.
You want Cool Whip or you want ice cream?
Is it low fat?
No, it's not. Have the Cool Whip.
Sorry, Mom. I have something that I want to tell you all, and I've been meaning to say it for a while, but I haven't been able to quite figure out how, so...
Rachel?
But I figure that since you're going to know soon enough, I might as well tell you.
Rachel, Dad, shh. It's okay.
This is something that I really, really want.
Rachel,
Dad, no.
What?
I'm pregnant.
What?
Isn't that great?
I'm having a baby.
Oh, Mazel Tov!
Baby.
Oh, it's wonderful.
But you're a lesbian.
What?
What did he say?
Oh, Dad, come on.
Rachel is a lesbian. You know, like Ellen.
Who's the father?
It doesn't matter who the father is.
Ellen who's the father?
Which is why
it doesn't matter who the father is.
Well, of course it matters who the father is. How are you going to bring up a child without a father?
Just be quiet and calm down because the twins are getting upset.
Listen, it's very common these days. And Rachel and Carla are going to be, they're going to be great parents.
I'm questioning what's right for the child.
Daddy, all that matters is that I have a baby inside of me. And I don't know what it's going to look like. I mean, we don't know. We think it's going to be a boy, but we're not sure. But I try to imagine
what he's going to look like in our home with Carla in it, and what his life is going to be like, and whether or not you're even going to want to know him.
Kyra Sedgwick there in Agarunda Charter's 2000 What's Cooking.
You've cut the best line. Soon after, the aunt who's just found out she's a lesbian, the one who's like Mazel Tov, goes, is the baby going to be Jewish? You know, because that was the most important thing.
But I love that that's such an authentic scene. Like, I can't, like, tell you how accurate the is it low fat line is.
But like, you know what? That scene, unfortunately, people are still living that moment, yeah, and having those conversations with their families in rainbow families when they have, you know, I've recently had to come out to a lot of ethnic Greek families and, you know, how's the child going to be raised? So, you know, it's still that conversation.
Well, my best
still
friend
happening.
Came out at the Shabbat dinner table Friday night. And we told him, don't do it. And he did it anyway. And, you know, I think it went relatively well. But
is that like coming out on Christmas
it's
for
exactly,
us?
Yeah.
Is that
yeah.
So you don't do it at certain occasions?
Well, I mean...
But Shabbat's every Friday.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, like, days, you know, that's the time when all the family's together. Surely that's probably the best time to...
Come out.
To come out in a Jewish family.
Do you wait till dessert? Do you wait till the meal's over?
Well, you do. I would.
Would you?
Because, you know, if it goes badly, you'll miss dessert. And that's the best part of the meal. You want to wait till after you've had it.
The thing is usually people are pretty happy after they've eaten, you know. You don't want to say it at the start
especially
of the meal
if
because they could be hangry.
If you're at an Alan Tuxford event, in which case there'll be like umpteen bottles of rum in the dessert. So,
oh yeah,
they'll
for dessert.
They'll be well pished by the end. So that's a good strategy. Wait till the end of the meal, then tell them.
Look, I love this film, What's Cooking. I didn't love it so much when I saw it, but you know, it's been 18 years since it was in cinema, and I think it's developed really well. Like it's dated
it's
somewhat,
but
it stood the test of time in that there's something warm about this film. It kind of gives you a hug. It's directed by I'm sure I'm butchering her name, Gurinder Chadha, who followed this film up with Bend It Like Beckham.
I know. Fabulous film and Pride and what is it? Bride and Prejudice. But Bend It Like Beckham, like to watch that film, you wouldn't think it's the same because one's Hollywood and one's UK kind of.
And Bride and Prejudice was just a completely forgettable film.
No, yeah, too.
But I think, you know, Daniel, I did see this film many years ago. I mean, I do remember coming away feeling good. But upon reflection now, I think when I look at this film, I think there are so many stereotypes that this film relies upon. I mean, we had the tokenistic approach with the black family, the Asian family, but it gets worse than that. We've actually got the stereotypes that sort of underpin all of that. Don't you think that?
But our stereotypes are there because they're true.
It's got something to answer for. I mean, like here you are, you're talking about, you know, some of the stereotypical things that happen in a Jewish family.
The Vietnamese family end up eating KFC for dinner on their Thanksgiving evening. And I don't think that's stereotypical.
Well, you know, Daniel, the plot device, the context around that is that the turkey came out burnt out of the oven, so they had to do something.
Of course, the lesbians got the turkey right with the turkey basting. But anyway,
we are celebrating food in film. If you can't tell, this evening on Outtakes, more coming up right after this.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ Community Radio Station Joy 94.9.
You are listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9, the home of queer cinema, and we've been looking at some really heartwarming films this evening. Our divisive films as well.
The Cake Maker isn't heartwarming.
Yeah, I was about to say, Daniel, really?
No, sorry, Daniel. Who's in the room on that?
No.
You know, What's Cooking from 18 years ago? Yes, that was heartwarming.
I think generally speaking, food, we're looking at the way that food features in film.
Yeah.
And I think generally, you know, The Cake Maker not so much, but generally films that deal with food, they have a certain appeal. And if we look at films like films that we discussed at the top of the program, films like Julie and Julia, Chocolat.
Shout out for like water for chocolate.
Fried green tomatoes.
Yeah, fried green tomatoes. Absolutely. You
know, Babette's Feast.
Oh, wow. Delicatessen. We're going to go even darker. But anyway.
Let's not talk about the cook, the thief, his wife, and
my
lover.
Oh, my God. Yes. We're showing our age there, Alan.
But that brings us to a gay film that aired at MQFF a couple of years ago in 2014. It's called Eat Me. Oh, no, sorry. No. Eat With Me. I'm sorry. That was a Freudian slip. you know, this film is about it also too sort of has a diverse sort of background. We've got Elliot, who is a Chinese American. He's living in LA. He's running a Chinese restaurant. It's pretty bad. He can't cook for rubbish. Mm. And his mother rocks up, and his mother, who he has a kind of a strained relationship with, because even though she knows he's gay, she doesn't really like the fact that he's gay and tries to brush it under the carpet every opportunity. But you know, she's decided that she's living a small life and she wants to live a bigger life, and so she's left her husband, come in, and she's moving in with her son.
Mm.
And so really what we've got here is we've got this dysfunctional relationship where they don't really talk, they don't really communicate. And so it's really what we see here is they then finally start to bond over cooking, because you know his restaurant is going down the tubes, and then in this way,
because he's not being authentic.
So let me ask you this question.
Tell me.
She knows that he's gay in the film, and she disapproves. She doesn't like it.
Oh, it's not that she disapproves. It's just that she doesn't, you know.
It's that unspoken thing.
There's a divide. Yeah. There's a barrier in the family.
It's enough to know it, but to actually see it and live it and experience it.
But would you say
that's a totally different experience for her?
Would you say that there's this kind of divide in the family?
Oh, without a doubt, there is it is divided.
And would you say that the food brings them together and bridges this sexual divide?
Sexual divide?
Daniel, it's like you're reading my mind. They were the words that I was about to say. How could you know this, Daniel?
So just to recap,
you
think that food is used in film, in some films,
in this film, to bridge sexual divide. I object. You are leading the witness here. You wouldn't take him for a law student, would you?
Sexual divide. I don't understand that phrasing. I would say crossing the intergenerational divide here.
And cultural divide.
Crossing the, you know, the communication divide is probably what I would say here.
My advice with this one, watch Eat With Me. It is a recent film. You can get it. But order some dumplings, stay for a double feature, and watch The Wedding Banquet, Ang Lee's film. Go back and watch that film.
See, there is that Helen Mirren film. She owns an Indian restaurant.
That's a brilliant one as well. I craved Indian food for weeks after
seeing that film.
Are we all hungry now? I am. Mm-hmm. I think it's time we go and get some food.
That's it for another week on Outtakes. You are listening to Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.